I was working the lock on the door to what I had mentally labeled the power plant's Overmare's office, when Velvet Remedy bit my armored utility barding and gave a tug. My mind immediately conjured two possibilities. Either something was wrong, the sort of wrong that required silent notification, or Velvet Remedy had decided to ramp up my punishment with nuzzles and nips. Either really seemed just as likely. I heard a shuffling noise below. Okay, not punishment. Carefully I set down my tools, not wanting to risk a shock making me drop them. I peeked over the edge of the catwalk. Below us, hidden behind the last of the massive generators, was the shredded body of a Steel Ranger. Gasping in horror, I almost called out Steelhoof's name. But this wasn't Steelhoof's. The armor had subtle differences to the design which told me that this ranger had been a mare. Lumbering over the corpse was a hulking, demonic creature, canine only in the broadest comparison, 3 times the size of the armored pony whom it was tearing to ribbons with deadly claws that sliced through the armor like it was paper mache. The hellhound stopped, sniffing at the air. It raised itself up to full height, then let out a pained howl, dropping back to all fours again. One of the creature's legs was crippled and deformed. The Steel Ranger had gotten in one good hit before falling to the monster. The monster reached over and picked up a bizarrely designed magical energy rifle from the floor. Again, it began to look around. Velvet Remedy crouched flat against the catwalk. I shied away from the edge. We held our breaths. We heard a grunt, then a whimper and shuffling. It was moving, but to where? I carefully lifted the screwdriver and bobby pin again, hoping that this office offered a back way out. I didn't want to crawl back across the long catwalk. If it could smell us, I wanted out of this room quickly. The tumblers fell into place. The door opened with a click that felt deafening. We both heard an odd vocal sound from somewhere below. We both rushed into the room as quietly as we could, and I gently pushed the door closed behind us. But it was too late. I could see the monster climbing up one of the sets of stairs like a monkey, if that monkey were made out of death. I looked immediately to the wall where the elevator had been in iron-shot firearms. No such luck. I took in the room quickly. Desk, terminal, wall, weapons cabinet. A weapons cabinet in a power plant? Filing cabinet, office fridge, miscellaneous badly decayed furniture. No other exit at all. I figured it would take the hellhound all of seconds to claw through the door. It would take longer, with its bad leg, to get across a catwalk. Velvet Remedy galloped to the far corner, horn beginning to glow. Damn it, if these things could claw through an Elecon's shield, what good would Velvet's do? I floated out little Macintosh and my sniper rifle, although I would have only the slimmest chance to get a shot off with the latter before the monster closed the distance and killed me. We waited. As the seconds dragged on, I started counting the missed opportunities to swap out ammunition for something with more punch. But as much as I yearned to do so, I was certain that the moment I emptied little Macintosh would be the moment the hellhound came through the door. Velvet Remedy was trembling, tensely holding her spell. She was shooting me furtive looks that I couldn't interpret, but didn't dare even whisper. We waited several more seconds. By my estimation, the hellhound should have already reached the door. Was it just sitting outside? Or had it gone away? I forced myself to think through the clouding effect of fear. Steelhoofs said these things were smart. It could be planning. But what would it be planning? What would I plan if I was an incarnation of death? A wounded one? What I wouldn't do is charge in through a door where the ponies on the other side were waiting to shoot me. No. I'd set a trap. It was setting a trap. My mind had snatched that idea when Velvet whispered one of her own. It tracks by scent, she hissed. What if it went the wrong way? I didn't think that was likely. It must have heard me shut the door behind us. But if Velvet Remedy was right, then that meant it was heading up towards Steelhoofs and Calamity, and we were wasting precious seconds that we didn't have. Of course, if I was right, rushing out to save them would be exactly the trap-springing mistake it was looking for. Cautiously, I inched towards the door. I was nearly to it when I heard a sound from somewhere on the other side, faint and brief and unfathomable. I jumped, backpedaling until my tail hit the far wall. I crouched, cowering, and readied my weapons to shoot. All of them. With a sense of utter dread, I grew tired of waiting. My nerves were frazzled from adrenaline. The room's musty, dilapidated odor was giving me a headache. I thought I had heard the strange sound a few more times, but it was so faint through the door that it could have just as easily been the whispers of my mind playing tricks on me. By now, if the monster had gone after Steelhoofs and Calamity, they were already dead. If it was stalking us, it was clearly willing to wait forever.
"Fine," I hissed. "I'm going to find out what we're going to die for, and then I'm leaving, slow and careful. I'm expecting a trap."
Vivid Remedy nodded.
"Just keep us out of the Hellhound's way. I've got a plan."
Velvet Remedy had a plan?
Velvet?
I quickly chided myself for being so surprised. She was smart and capable, if not exactly what I considered wasteland wise. And besides, it was bound to happen sooner or later. I started with the weapons locker, only to find that, like the ammo boxes upstairs, the lock had been mangled by an amateurish lockpicking attempt. I felt a flare of hatred. Steelhoofs and Calamity might be dead. We might be about to die, and this idiot had fucked up the lock. I moved on to the desk, only to find it had been unlocked and emptied. The filing cabinet had been unlocked as well, but inside I found mostly ashes, with the burnt remains of documents and folders, as well as a partially melted audio recorder with no recording remaining. My rival lockpicker had opened this filing cabinet with the intent to destroy the contents, not loot them. I turned to the terminal. Hacking it was hard, but not as hard as Pinkie Pie's terminal. But either my rival had gotten into it before me, or the terminal's spell matrix had been programmed to wipe out all the contents. The terminal was blank. That left the wall safe, which I had purposefully left for last. Looking it over, I had to bite back a whistle at the craftsmanship. The lock was, by far, the most complicated and demanding I had ever attempted. Not to mention the sturdiest. My rival had clearly tried and failed here too, but the lock resisted even jamming. The bitch had responded by breaking off a bobby pin in a mean attempt to prevent me from getting the prize it had denied her. I pulled it out with simple telekinesis. My first attempt failed. As did my second. I thought I had it the third time, but was only rewarded with a broken bobby pin. Damn it, I wasn't sure if, without the benefits of party time mentals, I could manage it. No, I wasn't going down that path. Not again. Instead, I pulled out every lockpicking tool I had at my disposal and tried again. And again, and again, until I finally got it right. The safe clicked open. Inside was a fair amount of pre-war gold coins, two clips of those very scary bullets, a stealth bug and a memory orb, and a golden iron pony saddle buckle. If it's an iron pony buckle, why is it colored gold? That last I left behind. Motioning Velvet Remedy behind the desk, I crouched down and focused on the door. A telekinetic field enveloped the door, depressing the handle with a click and pulling it open. The first thing I saw was the Hellhound crouched at the far end of the walkway, holding its rifle as it tracked a target I couldn't see. The first thing I heard was a symphony of beeps as the medical energy mines that the Hellhound had attached to the door prepared to detonate.
Beep, 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 beep.
My instinct was to slam the door shut, but even if the backlash didn't kill us, the explosion would destroy the bridge. Instead, I grasped them each with my telekinesis and shot a prayer to the goddesses that the actual strength of my spell was enough to pry them off the door. The Hellhound turned and fired a beam of orange light at me. It struck inside the open wall safe, scorching the back. The energy splash turned the iron pony buckle brightly hot. The damn mines wouldn't budge. The Hellhound might as well have attached them with Wonder Glue. And in retrospect, probably did.
Beep, beep, beep.
There was no more time. I slammed the door shut and ducked. The explosion melted the wall. It also turned enough of the floor to goo that the desk fell into the room below us. Without thinking about it, Velvet and I leapt down after it. The last thing I thought I saw before I plunged into the darkness below was Pyrelight soaring across the wide open space above the generators, the Hellhound trying to track her with its rifle. The last thing I heard was the rending sound of metal. Pain lanced up my left foreleg with every step. Considering what we had momentarily escaped, I was happy for it. I had merely twisted my hoof. I still had all my limbs attached. The hallway led past bathrooms on one side and what I suspected was a supervisor's break room, complete with vending machines. The opposite side of the hallway bore a set of three framed and backlit posters, each with a different illustration but the same proclamation in big, bold letters. Progress. The highly stylized images were, in order, a train engine bellowing smoke and hauling multiple passenger cars all by itself, ponies staring up in marvel at a monorail train passing overhead, and a mare marveling in near-orgasmic glee as her spider-like hoverbot dusted her furniture. The last poster's backlighting was flickering maddeningly. We found two more slashed-apart steel rangers before we made it to the stairwell. To my dismay, the only way out was back into the generator room. Vivid Remedy whispered to me, "When I say the word, gallop for all you're worth." A shot of fear went through my breast. "I don't know how much run I can manage right now," I said, but my real fear was that her plan was self-endangering. "Try self-levitating just enough that you aren't putting any real weight on your hurt hoof," she recommended. "And don't worry, I know that look. I'll be right behind you. Promise." Honesty, a pony in my head reminded me, was not Vivid Remedy's virtue. "You'd better be, or I'm coming back." She nodded. I had little Macintosh in front of me, now loaded with magically enhanced bullets. I took a breath. We stepped cautiously out onto the main floor of Hippocampus Energy Plant number 12. We were able to spot the injured Hellhound almost immediately. It was perched on top of a generator, shooting at Pyrelight, who in turn was twirling and dancing in the air, occasionally sending puffs of green flame in the monster's direction. Pyrelight was distracting it for us. Belatedly, I realized those odd sounds I had been hearing were shots from the magical energy rifle, muffled by the door. Notes to self. First, Pyrelight is willing to risk herself for Velvet Remedy, and possibly me as well. Second, Pyrelight is an amazingly agile flyer. Third, Hellhounds may be 50 different flavors of murder, but they aren't necessarily good shots. The Hellhound took less than a second to notice our presence, leaping savagely at us, bloodthirsty claws outstretched. It gave a slight yelp as its ruined leg hit the floor, but its good leg pushed it towards us with a speed that caught me off guard. I froze, forgetting to fire. The light around Velvet Remedy's horn pulled away, becoming a ball of light that soared towards the Hellhound, striking it in the shoulder. The monster seemed to instantly lose all coordination, collapsing in a jumble of limbs, skidding towards us on the floor out of sheer momentum. "Go!" Velvet Remedy yelled as she started galloping, giving the monster a wide berth as she made for the far end, leaping over bits of the catwalk which had collapsed into the room. I followed, taking her suggestion. The pain still slowed me, but it was manageable. The Hellhound slashed out at me with those huge, terrible claws. I darted deftly out of the way. It tried to crawl after me, managing only a wicked slither. The Hellhound had fallen and couldn't seem to get up. Ahead of me, Velvet Remedy stopped and motioned me to continue ahead. I worried, but didn't argue. As I reached the opposite stairwell, I heard her calling out to Pyrelight behind me.
"Did you kill it?"
I asked, panting hard as Pyrelight swooped into the Sky Bandit through a shattered window, Velvet Remedy galloping up just a pace behind. The charcoal-coated unicorn tossed herself into the passenger wagon. I'd arrived just enough ahead of them to yell warning to Steelhoofs and Calamity while gulping for breath. I think what I said amounted to, "Ah, Hellhound, generators, rifle, velvet, spell, go, go, go!" Calamity had barely gotten the harness attached when Velvet dashed out onto the roof. Calamity spread his wings and with a firm beat pulled us off the roof and into the air. Velvet Remedy cocked her head to me, even as she caught her own breath.
"Killed it? Why ever would I do that? I'm not in the habit of killing my patients."
Blink.
"It was a what now?"
"An aesthetic spell," she smiled. "The poor thing was clearly in pain."
I stared at Velvet like she had completely spit her bit. Plus, it does have the very helpful side effect of preventing the patient from running around. Very hard to do when you can't feel your legs. She smiled cleverly, her eyes twinkling. I fell to my haunches. Damn. That plan... Damn. Recovering a little. You didn't actually heal it, did you? Velvet rolled her eyes. I took that as a no. Personally, I would have killed it if I had recognized it was virtually helpless. But in a way, I was happy that Velvet had not. I had been worried that the wasteland was robbing her of that compassion which made her so special. It had eroded her spirit, there was no getting away from that. But it was good to see that my Velvet remedy, in a my Pinkie Pie sense, was still there. Even if, contemplating those three steel rangers, I really disagreed with this particular decision. When did you learn to do that? I asked amazed. Velvet tossed her mane and smiled. Back in Ten Pony Tower while you were... out. Dr. Helpinghoof had quite a nice selection of old Ministry of Peace medical spells for sale. Velvet Remedy smiled wistfully. Apparently, Fluttershy's ministry had a whole department of unicorn ponies dedicated to medical research. The pony in my head perked with alarm, but was ignored. You can buy spells? Velvet Remedy nickered. If by what you mean barter for tutelage, then yes. But Dr. Helpinghoof was an earth pony. Yes, Velvet Remedy patronized. But his assistant was a nice unicorn buck. Anyway, don't feel too bad. I doubt you've missed out on anything. All the teaching in the world won't help if you don't have a natural talent for the type of spell you are trying to learn. I'll never be able to cast lightning from my horn, or turn a rock into a top hat, or conjure a door out of thin air. No matter how many bottle caps I try to spend or hours I try to learn, entertainment and medical spells are my gift. I tried not to visibly droop. Yeah, and mine is to do the same spell every single unicorn can do. The first one we learn. And that's it. It was like having a pipbuck as a cutie mark. The epitome of non-magical. No, Velvet's voice chided. Your gift is to do that spell better than any pony else in at least 200 years. I gave her a weak but thankful smile that did make it sound better.
Sorry about this,
Calamity said as he hung from the harness, wings drooping. The entire sky bandit was wrapped in the soft light of my levitation spell, glowing against the darkened sky as I drifted us slowly towards a freestanding section of overpass, 3 piers long. It looked plenty sturdy and should be safe from hellhounds. A place to spend the night. No need to apologize, I insisted. Calamity had been flying for hours on end with only the stop at the hippocampus energy plant for a break. I envied the Pegasus's endurance.
More got up and go, Calamity bemoaned. Just kinda got up and went.
He looked out towards the standing chunk of overpass.
You're gonna make it that far?
No sweat. Actually, much sweat. I was already beginning to feel the strain and the overpass was at least half an hour away. I would have said there was no way I could hold us that long, but after all Calamity did, I'd be damned if I couldn't find the fortitude to take us this tiny bit farther. We moved across the sky with aching slowness. I still can't believe, I fretted. I mean, the idea that you could barter for spells never even crossed my mind. I let out a sigh. I guess that explains why Velvet Remedy is our diplomat and master trader, and I'm...
A toast or repair pony?
Calamity supplied when I was at a loss for words. I laughed and nodded. Pyrolite fluttered out and perched on the rust-colored Pegasus's battle saddle, clamping onto it with her claws. She spread her wings and flapped, as if with my magic in play she could hope to pull the skybandit herself.
Drat, Calamity chuckled. Pretty soon y'all won't meet me for Anderson.
My eyes widened in alarm.
What? Don't say that.
Well, it ain't past my attention that I've been not with ya on your adventures far more lately than I've been with ya.
I opened my mouth to tell him how not true that was, and stopped as the reality of the statement sank into me. Instead,
Calamity, you're my closest and dearest friend.
Not including Omash, I mentally added.
You keep me strong, you keep me from losing it, I will always need you.
Sure, y'all says it now.
And next adventure, we'll go together, you and me, I promise.
The setting sun dipped below the cloud line, setting the clouds ablaze with brilliant oranges and dark crimsons. The effect was magnificent against the black clouds that hung over Philadelphia, turning the whole post-apocalyptic city into a fiery hell.
Diam?
There were dark spots floating around over the city. We were close enough to make them out, but just barely. Calamity had spotted them too, as he had asked me to float him the binoculars. He scanned the air between the silhouetted ruins of Philadelphia and conflagrant sky.
Oh, hell,
he said, motioning for me to take a look myself. I floated the binoculars to my own eyes and stared towards Philadelphia, seeing hundreds of molten fires in the black below. Chimneys poured out constant smoke. The draconic skeleton of a massive roller coaster added an alien touch to the city's skyline. The dark silhouette of the Philadelphia town shot upwards into the sky. Following it with my gaze, I saw them. Dozens of pink dirigibles shaped like creepy pink smiley faces complete with ears and mane floated around the sky above the city ruins.
Pinkie Pie balloons.
There's a name for them. Calamity gave a shudder. Anyway, I was more looking at what the ponies in those Pinkie Pie balloons were packing. We sure as hell ain't flying into there.
I looked again, turning up the magnification as high as it would go. I saw Earth ponies attending mounted rifles easily 2 ponies long, scoped and terrifying. They were what my sniper rifle would like to be when it was all grown up.
Anti-machine rifles, Calamity informed me.
I now had a very good idea what my scary new bullets were supposed to be for. He was right. Taking the Pegasus-pulled bomb anywhere near that skyline was a death sentence. From here on in, we walked. We'd be sneaking into Philadelphia by hoof. I sincerely hoped we were out of Hellhound territory.
How did the much deified Princess Celestia and Princess Luna allow our land to become like this? How did the mayors of the Ministry allow the greatest and most glorious nation in the world to die in balefire and agony? The answer is quite simple. Incompetence. For generations, the hardworking ponies of Equestria toiled to build this great land, and the leaders sat back and reaped the benefits. And not only them, but a great majority of ponies throughout the land. They enjoyed the fruits of hard labor without lifting a hoof themselves. They lay back, slept on clouds, idled their days away like parasites, feeding on the sweat of the workers. Workers like you, workers like me. They became selfish and lazy. And laziness, my little ponies, breeds stupidity. The destruction they brought down on us was, in a word, inevitable. They couldn't do any better because they weren't any better. But today, we all work, and tomorrow, when our toil is done, we will step forward and be accepted into the loving embrace of the goddess and be transformed. And in the coming unity, we will all reap the rewards of our own brows, together, as equals.
I shut off Red Eye's broadcast. Somehow, they always left me feeling twisted inside. He was unpleasantly convincing sometimes. A steady diet of this fodder and I might find myself biting his poisoned apple. Calamity had collapsed from exhaustion the moment we touched down on the overpass and was snoring softly nearby. There were other vehicles up here, including a large Sunrise Sarsaparilla delivery wagon that had been heading towards Philadelphia, a faded painting of a smiling Celestia watching over happy sarsaparilla drinkers adorning its side. A couple of camouflage-painted chariots were abandoned on the far edge, part of a military convoy, the rest of which was crashed and buried under the collapsed section of overpass beyond. I wanted to poke around, explore, but I'd promised Calamity. And while looking in the backs of a few wagons wasn't really an adventure, I was sure he'd be sore with me if I didn't wait for him. With good reason. Velvet Remedy was asleep as well, pyrolite perched on her shoulder, plumage seeming to glow in the dying light. The Balefire Phoenix looked proud and, if it wasn't my imagination, possessive. Steelhoofs was on guard again. I didn't think I'd ever seen him sleep. Did ghouls even need sleep? So much I didn't know.
I like you, I said, smiling to the mystical bird. You're...
The word that came to mind was simple, but after my mistake with Velvet Remedy earlier, I was watching my choice of vocabulary.
straightforward. I don't have to worry about any hidden agendas or dark secrets with you. You watched us, dare I say, out of curiosity? If so, it is something we have in common.
The Balefire Phoenix let out a pleasant whistle.
Velvet Remedy helped you and you decided to stay with her. Friendship, pure and uncomplicated.
The Phoenix preened.
You chose well, I added, looking to Velvet Remedy. She really is a very good, very special pony.
I reached over and put a hoof on her flank, touching her cutie mark.
A singeing bird.
Pyrolite scowled, giving a hoot backed by a little burst of green flame. My pipbuck briefly click-clicked, then was quiet again. I drew back my hoof with a laugh.
Don't worry, I'm not a rival. She's all yours.
A touch chagrined, I added.
Maybe once I would have been, but things have changed.
The green and golden phoenix cocked her head. I found a way to explain.
Velvet put me in a cage. It was for my own good. I was sick and hurting myself. But after that, I paused. We're just good friends.
Pyrolite seemed satisfied with that, but I wasn't going to pet Velvet Remedy's flank to find out. I was having trouble sleeping. The fright earlier and the worries of what lay ahead merged into a constant buzz in my head. I couldn't afford to go into this new situation half stupid from lack of rest, but that worry only made it worse. I couldn't force myself to sleep. I'd tried. A distraction might help derail the worried thoughts swarming my head. I pulled out the memory orb from the power plant. I stared at it for a moment, running through a mental checklist. I wasn't in battle or imminent danger, so it should be safe. On the other hoof, these orbs were always a gamble. I remembered the sickening experience of the damaged memory orb all too vividly. Part of me also wondered if I was just using lack of sleep as an excuse to indulge my curiosity. I probably was. Well, that was okay. Who didn't have their vices? The memory held within it something amazing, wondrous, inspiring. Sunlight. Pure, radiant sunlight, unfiltered and unmolested by a cover of clouds. The ball of fire in the sky was at once terrifying and majestic, the living symbol of the goddess Celestia herself. Its light was powerful, capable of slashing through darkness and shadows, revealing and cleansing. It was warm and compassionate, and it brought with it a sense of peace and hope. Sunlight was as miraculous to me as a pipbuck was to the ponies of the equestrian wasteland. And, likewise, it was as pedestrian to the pony I was riding as my pipbuck was to me. I was standing on a balcony with several smartly dressed gentle stallions, staring down into a huge sunlit foyer lined with clear windows of glass that rose at least 3 stories high. The scene outside was idyllic. Colorful ponies, finely dressed, went about their business along cobblestone sidewalks bordering a boulevard of grass. A geometrically perfect field of green divided into precision shapes by cobblestone paths and a huge reflective pool. The buildings on the other side were largely obscured by trees, but I could tell they were as regal and impressive as the one I was in. Balconies and mezzanines arced around the airy open atrium. Large gardening boxes held full-grown apple trees. And everywhere, ponies moved about busily. After looking about briefly, my host focused on the light-colored marble floor below, where a throng of ponies were causing a disturbance. It was a small mob, pressing in towards a single figure in the center. A zebra.
Go back where you came from!
Did you think you could just trot into a ministry?
Better wiped than striped.
What are you doing here? Are you a spy?
A voice rang out over the crowd as a familiar orange pony with blonde mane and tail came trotting down an arcing stairway.
Simmer down, Sally. The Cura ain't no spy.
Applejack reached the throng and quickly dispersed the ponies, who grumbled as they went back to work. In just over a minute, it was just her standing alone with the extremely out-of-place zebra. Other ponies were giving them a wide berth, shooting stares. Applejack shot even better stares back, causing several to shy away, picking up their pace.
Finally, she turned to the zebra, looking deeply apologetic. Zecora, you really ought not to be walking around like that. It ain't safe these days.
I thought I could visit a friend, the zebra replied in an exotic and strangely poetic voice. I should have known how it would end.
Well, there's a war on, Applejack said reasonably. She lifted a hoof to scratch beneath her ear, looking embarrassed.
Ponies hate and fear me still, no better than in Ponyville.
The zebra's voice was deep with disappointment. To you folk, zebras may seem strange, but ponies never change. Gee, thanks, Applejack frowned, bristling a little. Then she let out a sigh. Let's all get you out of sight, okay? Come with me.
Applejack paused, looking around the huge atrium.
I should have an office in here somewhere.
This is her ministry and she doesn't even know where her office is?
Lady Applejack, how good to...
A gentle stallion called out, approaching from a different stairwell. He stopped as he spotted the zebra.
Oh my. Ah.
Applejack grimaced, face-hoofing.
Mario too, Starshine. Ain't nothing wrong with Sakura. She's my friend.
Oh, of course, the gentle stallion said gracefully. I have nothing against zebras. In fact, my company is one of the only in Canterlot who make a practice of hiring zebras. Well, wasn't he a smarmy buck?
Let the Ministry of Propaganda say what it will. Ministry of Image,
Applejack corrected.
I believe that's what I said,
Starshine stated dismissively, turning his attention fully to the zebra.
Anyway, Zakura is it? Should you ever find yourself looking for work, look me up. Anyone who has Lady Applejack's hoofprint of approval... Was there something you wanted, Starshine?
Applejack interrupted impatiently.
Oh yes, I just wanted to pass on a little thank you for MWT's support for our Stallion Grotton Manhattan expansions. Everything's working smoothly and I expect nothing short of a stellar success. I told you before, Starshine, we don't take backpacks. And how we operate here.
Of course, banish the thought. The gentle stallion said in genial apology.
No, this is just a friendly gift, but never you mind then.
He didn't want to offend, of course.
Greasy git.
Absolutely everything about this pony was striking a negative note with me. From the look on her face, Applejack didn't seem to like him much either.
Now, Zakura, he said, turning back to the zebra woman. How do you feel about public transportation?
The stallion standing on the balcony next to me spoke in a quiet voice, drawing my attention away from the scene below.
Now she's strutting around publicly announcing friendships with zebras. The publicity alone could sink us.
I felt my host nodding along with the others.
Gentle Colts, I think it's time we discussed Applejack's retirement.